If I could have everybody's attention, please. We'd like to go ahead and get started. Thank you all for coming out tonight. This is my first public hearing of this type, so I'm new to this as you all are. So we're gonna work on this together. We're gonna try to be as civil and constructive as possible to have the best possible outcome for everyone. On behalf of myself and my co-chair, Senator Kaler, I want to welcome everybody here tonight. And if we can go ahead and do the roll.
Senator Aquino, Representative Davidsmeyer.
Here.
Senator DeWitt.
Here.
Representative Harper, Representative Hernandez, Senator Kaler,
here.
Representative McLaughlin, Representative Moeller, Senator Sims, Representative Sosnowski, Senator Stoler, Senator Severson. So that's three.
We have three members present. We were under a timeline to have these meetings. We were able to extend this a little bit to make sure that we gave every opportunity for... Okay. We also have Senator Ventura here. So thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Because of the timeline, a number of individuals on COGFA weren't able to be here, so they send their apologies, but I'm sure they're paying attention from home. I want to open this up. First off, to my co-chair, Senator Kaler, to give some comments if he'd like.
Yeah, thank you very much. This is an important issue. That's why you're all here. We intend to make sure that all your thoughts and your interests are being able to be expressed and that we can get you some answers on this. But I look forward to a good hearing, and thank you for coming.
COGFA is something that I requested to be on because my community, before I was in office, went through a closure. And so this is something that I was hoping I'd never have to be in charge of, but certainly am here from that perspective and understanding the needs of the state and the needs of the community as well. So I think let's go ahead and get started. If we can have Acting Director Latoya Hughes come up. Well, from the Department of Corrections to start. Thank you for being here, Director Hughes.
Thank you. Hello? Good evening. Thank you to co-chairs Kohler, Davidsmeyer, and members of the committee and members of the public present here today to take part in this process. We appreciate the opportunity to appear before you and listen to your feedback on the plan announced by Governor Pritzker and the Illinois Department of Corrections to close and rebuild Stateville Correctional Center. We recognize that this is a significant decision that impacts the lives of our staff, the individuals in our custody at Stateville, their families, this community, and the department's larger ecosystem. The department has and will continue to create meaningful opportunities to engage impacted stakeholders throughout this process to ensure its success. We are here today to emphasize that the urgent need to act now drives the administration's decision to close and rebuild Stateville rather than to repair it. The current living conditions at Stateville are not conducive to rehabilitation. The infrastructure is antiquated and inefficient, and delaying action only increases risk to all involved. The primary reason for the facility's closure during the rebuild is to address serious safety and security concerns posed to those who work and live in Stateville by the aging infrastructure. This is not just a matter of preference, but a necessary step to ensure safety, efficiency, and the fulfillment of our rehabilitative mission. An independent structural engineering study of the quarterhouse, the main housing unit that houses most of the individuals at Stateville, revealed critical structural issues with the building due to water damage, age, and deterioration requiring costly repairs. And if not repaired, pose significant safety risks to staff and the individuals in our custody. Stateville Correctional Center has over $250 million in deferred maintenance, and while it is true that this total includes buildings no longer in active use, these structures and their maintenance cannot be overlooked. Even if not operational, these buildings still require minimal utility usage and pose significant fire and safety hazards. Moreover, they are part of an interconnected utility network that is failing due to age and deterioration. Ignoring these buildings does not eliminate the risk, it just exacerbates it. A recent example is the smokestack at the inoperable powerhouse, a safety concern shared with AFSCME that requires $4.4 million just for demolition alone. Like the smokestack, other inoperable buildings in Stateville raise concerns about staff and individual custody safety. The deferred maintenance costs have escalated by 10% over the past year, and at this rate, they're expected to continue through 2026. Without intervention, the total deferred maintenance for Stateville is projected to reach approximately $372 million by fiscal year 2026 due to rising costs. This projection underscores the urgency of addressing these issues comprehensively, not just the parts that are most visible or currently in use. While the report from the independent structural engineering vendor identifies $12 million in immediate structural repairs, this figure grossly underestimates the full spectrum of urgent needs at Stateville proper. For example, there are extensive capital needs beyond the immediate structural repairs, totaling significantly more. These repairs include dietary repairs at $15 million, boiler system overhaul, plumbing rehab, IT infrastructure upgrades with $2.3 million for a baseline, and that's only as it relates to the needed electronic health record system. This doesn't account for the IT infrastructure upgrades required for fire suppression systems, which Stateville does not have a working one. This does not account for the building automated system that's needed for a building such as Stateville. The department contends it is not fiscally responsible to expend these funds while building a new facility. Furthermore, according to the Capital Development Board, the repairs within the interior and exterior of the courthouse would require the department to depopulate the facility during the construction for the safety and security of the individuals in custody, the staff, and the contractors. Additionally, the department is currently a defendant in the federal Dobby litigation, in which the plaintiffs allege that the conditions of the Stateville facility violate the Constitution. Should the rebuild of Stateville not move forward, plaintiffs will undoubtedly seek an injunction demanding immediate fixes, which would require the individuals in custody, again, to be relocated while these fixes are completed. The costly repairs needed to remedy all of the issues identified by CGL report, the outside firm contracted to assess the physical condition of each IDOC facility, and the structural engineering survey still will not resolve the deficiencies in design present in the 1920s facility. Structure to allow a rehabilitative approach at Stateville that is necessary to improve the safety of the facility for the staff and the individuals in our custody. In addition to insufficient space for out-of-cell time, programmatic activities, the facility also lacks office areas for staff. Our priority is to use state funds efficiently, utilizing state-owned land at Stateville, transforming the aging infrastructure into a multi-security level facility that better serves the needs of rehabilitation and successful reentry, and provides a safe and suitable workplace for our staff. The new design will support enhanced rehabilitative programs, including career and technical education, contributing to improved public safety and community reintegration. This strategic planning is pivotal in transforming Stateville into a facility that aligns with modern correctional goals, focusing on successful reentry and rehabilitation while maintaining closer proximity to individuals' families in the Chicagoland area, thereby enhancing their support system and improving outcomes upon their release. Will County's proximity to other collar counties and Cook County will continue to enhance the department's access to a broad network of service providers and potential vendors, further supporting the facility's operational needs and the rebuilding process. Currently, Stateville has a population of approximately 431 individuals in custody. And I would say the daily population as of today was 423. We want to reiterate that the department will not reclassify the security level of individuals in custody. Rather, we will look at their medical, mental health, programmatic, and educational needs along with their security level to identify a proper placement for them in a facility with that security designation. We also have repeatedly emphasized our focus on continuity in service delivery for the impacted individuals in custody. Continuity of care includes a personalized assessment of each and every individual in custody, taking into consideration their medical needs, their mental health needs, their programmatic needs, and their current and continued participation in programs upon transferring to another facility. The department will ensure that medical appointments continue and that individuals are matched with health care providers who will ensure care is provided. The notion that only one facility can provide quality care or specialized services is unfounded and unfair to the magnificent work and the hardworking medical professionals and staff throughout the department. The department is also fully aware of the importance of maintaining access to programming during the closure and the rebuild. We maintain a core curriculum of programming in which staff throughout the state have been trained to facilitate. Individuals in custody will have a wide array of programs to choose from to participate in when transferred, including the ability to continue to participate in the programs that they are currently engaged in. Current educational programming at Stateville, being the non-higher education program, includes adult basic education, where there are 14 students. Voluntary adult basic education, there are 10 students. Advanced adult basic education, there are 6 students, and there are 10 GED students, for a total of 40 students. Facilities throughout the state have these same classes and can and will accommodate these students. We have and will continue to engage our higher education partners to identify solutions that would permit their continued delivery of services to their students. Of the 431 individuals in custody impacted at Stateville, approximately 80 of those individuals in custody were already previously identified for transfer from Stateville, specifically to continue their educational pursuits in the Northwestern Prison Education Program, which was slated to move to Sheridan Correctional Center even prior to this process. As of March 31, 2024, Stateville Correctional Center employed a total of 939 staff, categorized as 676 security personnel, 263 non-security employees. And as part of the temporary closure of Stateville during the rebuilding process, the department will follow all of the required steps in the applicable collective bargaining agreements and the personnel code, which utilizes the process to transfer impacted employees. During this process, a large number of the correctional officers will be offered positions at Stateville's Northern Reception and Classification Center, which will remain open. The remainder of the security staff, as well as non-security staff, will be offered positions at other Illinois Department of Corrections facilities. Should staffing patterns hold, the department estimates that approximately 1,000 Illinois Department of Corrections positions are available within a 65-mile radius when considering positions at the Northern Reception Center, opportunities at Joliet Treatment Center, which again is in Joliet, which includes 268 positions, Pontiac Correctional Center, 506 vacancies, Sheridan Correctional Center, 169 vacancies. AFSCME's concern that closing this correctional facility while rebuilding it will disproportionately impact our most diverse workforce is not only unfounded, but based on current and anticipated open positions at NRC and within 65 miles, but also overlooks a critical aspect, the safety and well-being of those very workforce members. The decision to temporarily close this facility is driven by the urgent need to address critical structural issues that pose significant risks to all employees, including those from these diverse backgrounds. It is true that Stateville has the most diverse workforce within the Department of Corrections, which is a factor in proposing to relocate Logan to that campus as well. One of the goals of the department is to increase the diversity of its workforce, and moving Logan north would help achieve the goal in addition to providing our employees a safe new facility to work in, while simultaneously ensuring those in our custody are provided the tools to re-enter society successfully. The department will develop recruitment initiatives for both facilities prior to the completion of the rebuilds that will focus on recruitment of staff from diverse backgrounds. And furthermore, the department will continue to engage its stakeholders throughout this process to ensure that all impacted stakeholders are included in the discussions regarding the designs of the new facility. In addition to stakeholder input into the future design, the state of Illinois has an opportunity to gather input from other states, other countries, related to the design of the new facilities that will help the department to meet its goal of modern rehabilitation. Now, it is not lost on this department that any relocation creates disruption for employees, for their families, as well as for the individuals in custody and for their loved ones. However, this rebuild process will require a phased and systematic approach and will be implemented in a very systematic way to minimize disruption as much as possible. Once complete, the department will have modern facilities equipped with the technology and structural capabilities necessary to achieve its mission of providing a safe and secure environment for both the staff, the individuals in our custody, while advancing rehabilitation and reentry opportunities to reduce recidivism and foster safe communities. So I thank you for your time this evening. The department is here to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll start with Senator DeWitt.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Good evening, Director.
Good evening.
There we go. Thank you for coming. First off, let me just say how much I appreciate your staff over the course of the last few weeks when this has all started to roll out, how available they've made themselves, doing the best they can to provide information as far as what we're going to be seeing at this hearing and the hearing in Lincoln on Thursday.
Yes.
But I do have a number of questions. I understand there is no representative from the governor's office here today, which I think is unfortunate. This was his idea, and it looks like you're stuck holding the bag tonight. So based on that, I will pose my questions to you regarding a handful of subjects. You mentioned currently capacity at Stateville is 431 inmates. What's the total capacity? What can that facility hold?
All right. So as it relates to Stateville proper, the facility can hold, is it 1,201. 1,201. That's as it relates to Stateville proper.
Okay, so you're roughly...
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm reading Taylorville.
Folks?
Let's see.
And while we're waiting on an answer, the neighbor hotel said that they are going to start towing vehicles. So if you parked in the neighboring hotel's parking lot, you might want to go out and move that before they bring along a tow truck.
$850 is the rated capacity currently for Sayville.
Thank you. Thank you, Director. I appreciate that. And in conversation regarding the new Stateville, what it may look like, can you give us some idea what the planned capacity of the new facility might be?
Certainly. So the rebuild current design plan would include a capacity of approximately 1,500. But I will say that figure was utilized to create an estimate. So as we've discussed on a number of occasions, we will be including the feedback and the participation of a variety of stakeholders as we develop the design. And so that, again, is just an estimate to create an estimate as it relates to the cost.
Okay. So I take it that that type of a number that you're looking at from a projected population standpoint would assume that you anticipate population of this facility to eventually grow beyond its current 50% capacity? Is that a fair question?
Correct. Yes, we certainly would anticipate the new building addressing the needs of more than 431 individuals in custody, yes.
Okay. And are there any other potential closings of other facilities planned that you intend to use this newly created capacity at Stateville that justifies building a facility almost triple the size of the existing facility?
And so when the 1,500 number was developed for an estimate of the facility, it was not developed in a way that was anticipating any other facility feeding into it, if that is what your question is.
Mm-hmm.
And I can turn it over to Chief Brunk, who can talk about kind of where the 1,500 number came from and how that came about.
Thank you, Director, and thank you, Senator DeWitt. So the 1,500 came from other research that we had done, most notably from the state of California as well as the state of Georgia. Both of those Department of Corrections have undertaken similar initiatives to rebuild, rebuild in Georgia's case, retrofit in the case of California, and they had used 1,500, which was divided into 500-bed housing units, which, as the Director Hughes indicated, is what we used to come up with our estimated figures.
Okay. Have any proposals, quotes, bids been put out at all by either CBD or CMS or whoever will be overseeing construction of this new facility? I hear numbers being thrown around to rebuild Stateville and Logan here at Stateville. That's another subject for Thursday night, I guess. But I hear numbers in the $900 million range to rebuild both facilities here in Stateville. I'm just wondering, what's that number based on?
Thank you, Senator DeWitt. So what we did is we broke that figure down into five main components. And so the first component would be housing units, as we had discussed. That would be up to 1,500 beds, which, and I'm going to give a range for this, 170 to 215. security infrastructure, which would be the perimeter defenses, surveillance systems, and access controls, another $10 to $20 million. Administrative and operational buildings, which pretty much as it sounds, another $30 to $55 million. And I will provide this chart to COGFA as well. And then the fourth tenant would be rehabilitation and educational buildings. Those are spaces specifically dedicated to those functions and to programming the individuals in custody. That's a range of $35 to $75 million. And then support and recreational buildings, which would be for things like family reunification, health care, as well as other recreational buildings, $30 to $60 million. So that brings us to a total range of $275 to $425 million. Again, those are just estimates. And then to that, so that would be for one facility rebuild. So to do two brings us to about $850. And so we have also budgeted another $35 million for demolition of the structures being left behind at Stateville and another $15 million to demolish the structures left behind at Logan. So that's where the $900 million comes from. But at this point in time, we, as Director Hughes mentioned, we are collaborating with CDB, but no public solicitations have gone out just yet.
So these are pure estimates on your part?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Okay. They could be significantly lower?
They could be significantly lower. They could be significantly higher.
Right. My point. I understand the current problems with this facility. I know the fixes are very expensive, and a lot of them would need to be done relatively quickly if the building stays in operation. September 1st is the date I last heard as far as a targeted closing date for this facility. Is that still ballpark?
I believe what we indicated was that no sooner than 180 days after the beginning of the COGFA process, would we begin the process of closing the facility at Stateville? And so we kind of mapped out the time frame for the COGFA process, and then that's where we came up with that time frame.
Okay. And how soon after that facility closes would you go to design, go to bid? At what point would you anticipate construction starting on a new Stateville? Are we 12 months out? Are we 24 months out?
Thank you for that question, Senator DeWitt. I just want to make sure I understand. You, construction as in breaking ground? Or
absolutely.
Okay. In our conversations with CDB, it sounds like that there will not be ground broken approximately for a year. However, that would be something that we would want to discuss with them. However, I would also say that during that time, we are also engaging with an engineering firm to come and perform a structural as well as building assessments for the rebuild. So even though ground will not be broken, there will still be considerable work going on in preparation for that construction the following year.
Sure. Okay. So I guess I'd categorize that as design work would start immediately.
Yes, we are working with CDB to get that design work in process ASAP.
Okay. This is not a loaded question. Where are you with regards to employee transition? Are you comfortable that you have, I know you stated there are a number of facilities within a general proximity of Stateville, that there are opportunities available for other employees. Mm-hmm. How far along in that process are you with regards to discussions with your employees?
Thank you. So we have not begun those conversations fully because we are still engaging in the COGFA process. We have participated in two roundtable events at both Logan and Stateville to answer questions, to hear concerns, to do all of those things. We will ensure that we follow the layoff process, but I think it's important to also understand that the word layoff does not necessarily mean without a job. It's our process of how we move and transfer employees to other facilities. We have looked at the vacancies. The vacancies will provide that if people choose that, they have those opportunities within the Department of Corrections, and if not, other vacancies throughout other agencies within the state will be offered as well.
Once these employees are all transferred, assuming a majority of them accept transfers, and the new facility is built, will all those employees have an opportunity to come back to Stateville, or will you end up starting a staffing process all over again in a new facility 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the road?
The employees that leave Stateville will have first rights to that facility when we reopen.
Okay. I have one last question, and again, I guess I just would like to know the true intentions of the department, the administration, and honestly, I have to look at the current capacity of this facility, the current population of the facility, the current capacity of the facility, the fact that you're looking to basically triple the potential capacity of a new facility. I see this thing all over the board. What assurance can you give the legislature that there is even an intention to rebuild Stateville? And I'm only asking the question because the general population in all of the DOC facilities is down. Mm-hmm. And the numbers that I hear circulated, 30 to 35 to 40% capacity within the entire system. Mm-hmm. If these 400 inmates are relocated, would you even need Stateville at that point?
Thank you for the question. Thank you for the question, Senator. Stateville is our northernmost facility for our male population within the Department of Corrections. Stateville is one of the facilities that we receive the most interest as it relates to programming for the individuals in our custody. Stateville is one of the facilities that we utilize for the individuals in our custody for a number of reasons. Stateville is a facility that is important to the ecosystem of the Illinois Department of Corrections. We are committed to rebuilding Stateville Correctional Center for that purpose. We do believe that it will enhance reentry processes for the individuals in the northern region. We believe that we will be able to garner career and technical training opportunities. We believe that we will be able to garner additional educational opportunities for the individuals in custody at Stateville. So, yes, we are certainly committed to rebuilding Stateville Correctional Center because it is extremely important to the ecosystem of the Department of Corrections.
Okay. I want to thank you, Director, and your staff for making yourselves available this evening. Thank you for answering our questions.
If we can add Senator Sims to the roll and welcome Representative Benton. We'll move on to Senator Ventura.
Testing. There it goes. All right. Thank you for being here. Thank you all for being here. I also want to thank the Department of Corrections for guaranteeing that Stateville will indeed be rebuilt and opened, and thank you for your commitment to that. That's very important, obviously, to people in this room. But I do have some concerns about the timeline. It's been talked about in the last hearing that September was going to be the closure date. And I'm very confused on why this is such an early date, considering the design work has not been done, the bids have not put out. We are so far from groundbreaking. So I'm hoping that you can maybe shed some light on why this, I mean, to me it doesn't make any sense to do this early.
So I think it's important not to lose sight of the fact that
closer.
I think it's important not to lose sight of the fact that there are multiple reports out there now indicating the conditions of Stateville are inappropriate to be housing individuals in custody today. And one of them is the CGL report. For equality is indicated that it's inappropriate for those with mobility issues. And then you have a significant certified class action lawsuit in the Northern District of Illinois in Dobby, which challenges the conditions of confinement that the individuals at Stateville are currently living in. They allege that it's a violation of their constitutional rights to be here in at Stateville Correctional Center with these conditions. They cite as evidence many of the structural engineering reports that are a part of our recommendation, and many of those reports actually were the result of the litigation having the reports done. And if there were not movement to remove the individuals from the conditions at Stateville Correctional Center, it's highly likely there will be a TRO, preliminary injunction, filed by the plaintiffs in that case, where a judge is going to dictate what happens, and we don't have the ability to make the decision for ourselves. And as a result, you know, the department, with those reports out there and our recommendation, believe it is appropriate due to the infrastructure issues to do the closure now and then reopen when the rebuild's done.
So in the last year, did you guys not fix up the bee house?
Senator Ventura, thank you for that question. Respectfully, to fix up X House would be upwards of $15 million. And that funding, I'm sorry.
So to clarify, recently E House was, there was some work done there to stabilize some of that building. B House was completely redone, was my understanding, but yet nobody was moved into it after months of it being fixed up. C House and D House continue to have issues, and X House recently you guys had looked at, you've had it shut down, you've moved people in and out. But to be clear, the state spent a lot of money to fix up B House recently, and nobody has been moved back into that housing quarters. Is that correct?
I don't have that information.
Okay. So this is some of the reason I think the timeline is concerning. While I hear what you're saying about the court case and the mobility, I would agree that anyone who has mobility issues and handicap issues are individuals who do need to be moved out of that prison because their needs are not being met. You talked about the 80 individuals who are moving because of Northwestern moving to Sheridan. If there are individuals who are slated to be moved out, those individuals' transfers would make a lot of sense. But to completely shut down Stateville in September, when there are, we're at least a year away from any additional aspects of that, I would say that let the courts say it then, because right now you're the ones making that decision to impact all of these people's lives. So I have put forth other suggestions to DOC, so I'd like to move on and ask about that, but I do think the timeline is very concerning. So one of my other questions is, we have the Joliet Inpatient Treatment Center, a brand new state-of-the-art facility that is meant for inpatient mental health use. However, because of staffing needs, we have not been able to utilize that prison even close to even a tenth of a percent of what that prison could be utilizing individuals for. I had suggested that DOC look at using some of the pods there to transfer not just staff, the security staff, but also non-security staff, education programs, as well as some of the incarcerated individuals. I recognize there's not 432 or 423 beds there, but you could utilize it for some of the specialized programs and some of the jobs that are non-security that could potentially be lost. Did DOC look at this as a potential transfer plan?
Eddie Williams.
So currently the population that we're utilizing for JITC, we are moving incrementally individuals with serious mental illness there in order to be able to accommodate what the staff can handle. So incrementally there are four men and four women, again, as the wings can handle. We are standing up our infirmary with the help of University of Illinois at Chicago to start opening specialty clinics. Please keep in mind when you're talking about the Joliet Inpatient Treatment Center, it is solely not just for mental health care, it is also for specialty and infirmary medical care as well. It is a specialized facility that was truly brought forth by other litigation, and in accordance with many tenets of that litigation, it will remain for the seriously mentally ill as well as the medically challenged individuals at this point in time. It's a co-process with DHS. So they are staffing part of it, and we are staffing part of it. We've also made staffing changes, or at least requirement changes, to open up some of the degrees, because individuals that work as corrections treatment officers have to have at least a bachelor's degree. It used to be very narrow in scope. The scope has opened up, so we can potentially recruit more candidates. So with that, for individuals at Stateville that are currently with those bachelor's degrees, we can absolutely look at them as a possibility to come work with our seriously mentally ill as well as our infirm population.
What is the capacity of the JITC facility?
Do we have it? At this point in time, mental health is governing the numbers for each of the mental health units, and of course the infirmary patients will change.
I understand that, but what was the building built for capacity?
Yes, 168.
Okay, and how many individuals are incarcerated there now?
No. 75. So this one of the other units that the individuals behind me need to keep in mind is that we have moved part of JITC there too. So individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities are currently housed in one of the wings as well.
In the JTC or the JITC?
Individuals from JTC are being housed at JITC as well.
Okay. So when I had asked DOC to look at this as a potential plan, it obviously was not for the whole 400, but there are specialized programs like our higher education programs, our restorative justice programs that do not exist in other facilities today. And to utilize those individuals in that type of programming to be moved there, that would also help prevent losing of that staff, especially the non-security staff who work in some of these fields. Have you guys looked at other locations then if you felt like Joliet Inpatient Treatment Center, even though there's over 100 beds available, would not be a good fit?
So, yes, we have looked at multiple facilities. I actually facilitated a roundtable discussion with our higher ed providers yesterday, and we've engaged in multiple discussions with them prior to yesterday to determine the appropriate locations for both their professors as well as the students at Stateville. So, yes, we've absolutely explored those options. We've also explored the music program. We toured charity in recently with the director of that program, and we've also toured some of the other program leaders from Stateville to see what the other options are. So absolutely, we have done that.
And did all higher education programs that are currently at Stateville say they will continue to work at other prisons?
So currently, Illinois River is being explored by North Park as a potential, not as a definite. Northwestern, as we've talked about before, is going to Sheridan. DePaul and PNAP, as well as the Northeastern UUWD program, have not made their determination yet. We are still in discussions with them as to what would be most appropriate.
So one of my concerns with some of the programming, which has completely changed the mindset and the behavior patterns at Stateville because of some of these higher education programs and programs like Restorative Justice, is that we don't have the IT capacity at our facilities. And so moving these facilities elsewhere does not allow DePaul or PNAP to utilize online services in these schools, especially things like the In-N-Out program that DePaul has. A big part of the draw to funding that program is that students from the DePaul facility get to go into the prison and do work. Are they going to drive to Sheridan and Pontiac and continue to do that work?
Currently, we offer a lot of other programs, and I'm glad that you asked that question, Senator Ventura. Let me give you an example. Adler University from the Chicagoland area currently services our individuals at Ina, Illinois, which is in southern Illinois. It's one of our most effective higher ed programs. They do have staff there, and they do virtual. We do have technology available through our smart television capabilities in every institution in order to be able to accommodate those services, and we are currently engaged in a discussion, and we have awarded a contract for tablets, which hopefully will affect that effort as well.
So we can guarantee that DOC is going to fix their IT infrastructure to ensure that their facilities can meet the demands of today.
We are working expeditiously with DOIT to get that done.
So one of my last questions is how do we plan to restaff Stateville when we have such a hard time today hiring enough staff to run this facility? More recently... More recently, or ongoingly, I should say, Stateville has had intermittent, let's call them shutdowns, of areas where individuals can't eat in the galley, they can't go outside, they don't have yard time. We've shut down the education programs. Even right now, you're on a rotating schedule of what used to be, and all of this is because of the lack of staffing. So if we can't hire the staff today, and then you're going to lose over 238 individuals who are non-security personnel, how can you guarantee that you can hire these positions back when all of these individuals are going to be forced to take jobs outside of this area?
Hopefully, when it comes to facility build, we'll build a much smarter design that was done than 1925. In 1925, the philosophy was to lock people away and not rehabilitate them. That's why Stateville looks the way that it does. And the new designs that we're looking at, whether that's in Georgia, whether that's in California, whether it's in New York, whether it's in Norway or any of the Scandinavian countries, designs are very different. They're much more effective with our staff usage, making lines of sight better, lighting better, the uses of staff and the use of technology and automation better, making jobs easier for our staff. When I would look at a facility built in this day and age compared to a 1925 facility, I would hope to heck that that would bring in staff as well as our staff back to come work in an environment that is healthy and safe for them.
In all due respect, I think most people in this room did not come to this job for the facility. They came before the wages, the benefits.
Understood, and their wages will continue to increase because of the contract.
So I guess my point is, as we continue to struggle with Tier 2 pensions, with insurance costs, these are the real hurdles that we have to overcome to hire this, as well as the mindset. And, yes, why we lock people away, I think, is a big crucial part of the change of DOC. And I thank you all for your leadership in that direction. But in order to get that information out and really make these jobs, you know, entice that you want to go and work at these facilities, as beautiful as they may be in the future, it really comes down to these other aspects. And if we can't hire today based on that, I have a huge fear that we will not be able to hire in 5 years for that. And what I don't want to hear is that, I'm sorry, Senator Ventura, our commitment to opening Stateville cannot happen now because we can't hire. Considering you can't hire for the inpatient treatment center, that's just a few miles from here.
Understood and noted, Senator, and thank you. And I would have to defer the Tier 2 to the legislators.
Really quick. I understand the enthusiasm and the opposition to what's going on, but I want to make sure that everyone gets a chance to be heard tonight, and the more interruptions we have, the less time we'll have for all of you to be heard. So I just want to make sure that we take that into account when things you like are being set up here and we interrupt with loud applause and excitement. So Yeah, Senator Ventura has another question.
Sorry, one last question. I had asked also, if we are building two prisons, why are we not initially building the Stateville prison? And you can do that outside of the current Stateville area. You can have your design work and all of, we have plenty of land there, and then transfer everybody over to that facility and have the least amount of disruption. Why is that not the number one plan?
Senator Ventura, I believe Chief Fanning, the Chief Legal Counsel, spoke to why that is not the plan. of them.
I believe Representative Benton had a question or two.
Make sure everyone can hear me. I have a deeper voice. Can you hear me in the back of the room? All right. So I'm Representative Harry Benton. I represent part of Will County and Kendall County, Joliet, Naperville, Plainfield, Shorewood, Oswego, Bolingbrook, and Aurora. So a lot of people in this room live there. Grew up in Crest Hill, so I'm very familiar with Stateville. During the meetings that we had before everything was announced, I do have a problem that there wasn't a conversation with AFSCME before that was announced, right? Because I think they should have been at the table. There should have been some conversations before this happened, along with conversations with DOC Labor Relations before it happened. I just want to go on record, and again, sorry I'm late, and I've got to get going because I'm triple booked today. But we have the early childhood agency that's getting ready to start. If we have voluntary layoffs, according to our state statute, are we going to trigger a statewide hiring freeze? I want that on the record, and I want to make sure that we don't run into a time frame where we run into some major issues.
I would have to defer that to labor.
Thank you for the question. And at this time, we have not determined if it will trigger the statewide layoff. Once we continue to move through this process, it will be something that we will be considering.
Okay. That is something that I'm concerned about because, again, with that agency, I worked on that within my collective committee. I want to make sure that we don't have any hiccups for both the Stateville portion of it. I don't want to see anybody lose their jobs. I don't want to see anybody not be able to be hired on both sides of it because child care and incarceration and rehabilitation, these are very important things across the state of Illinois. So I don't want any hiccups for anything, and we need to have a little bit of foresight before we go in. We can't be, you know, caught a little bit too late on that one. And I appreciate everybody being out here, too, especially AFSCME. I'm third-generation union on both sides of my family, so I appreciate you. And I appreciate everybody making the drive, too, because there's a lot of people up here in this at this table that have driven pretty far to be here. So thank you for all of them. And thank yous to Chair Kaler and Chair Davidsmeyer.
Thank you, Representative Benton. I have a few questions. Does anybody else have questions? Okay. As was discussed earlier, we're looking at population currently in the 420-some range, 850 capacity, but building a facility for 1,500. Now, you mentioned a number of facilities that are having hiring difficulties that also have maintenance backlogs. Pontiac, for instance. When are we going to be back here talking about Pontiac? I mean, because we're talking about closing two facilities today and then reopening them, right, somewhere else. But when are we going to be talking about Pontiac? In 7 years when this thing's built?
So the department is obviously thinking about all of our correctional facilities, right, because that's something that we have to do. That was one of the reasons for the CGL report. That gives us an idea of the deferred maintenance at each and every one of our facilities and some of the things that need to be fixed as it relates to our facilities. What we're focused on right now, though, is Stateville and Logan based on the fact that the deferred maintenance at both of those facilities is extremely high and that these are two facilities that are extremely important to the ecosystem of the Department of Corrections, which is why we wanted to focus on those two facilities. But the department is always thinking about all of our other facilities and what needs to be done to address the deferred maintenance at those other facilities, and we will continue to work on that as well. We're always thinking about hiring throughout the ecosystem of the Department of Corrections as well. So we are always thinking about all of those facilities. We're thinking about Pontiac as well.
And when you announced the closures of both Stateville and Logan, you were very upfront about your plan for Stateville, but you were quiet about Logan until we had our first hearing in Springfield a few weeks back. And so that's why I'm thinking in the back of your head, you've got Pontiac saying, or another facility, but Pontiac, for instance, it sounded like you got a lot of jobs needed there. I'm thinking there's an ulterior motive for the 1500, and it's going to take a lot to prove me wrong on that. And to be fair to you, how long have you been with the department in your current position?
In my current position?
Yeah.
Just a little over a year.
Okay. So, and I'm not saying that to put you on the spot. I'm just saying you were put in a position that everyone prior to you did not do their job, but it's still the responsibility of the state of Illinois and the Department of Corrections to fix these issues. And there is deferred maintenance throughout the entire system that is beyond belief. Can I ask a question about, you mentioned a layoff. What is the layoff process? I mean, it sounded to me like we'll offer you a job, and if you choose not to take it, then you're gone. I mean, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. That's what it sounded like to me when you said it.
So, again, thank you for that. Layoff is not meaning we're not going to provide you with an opportunity for a position. There will be an entire process followed through the CBA as we go through this process. Each employee will be offered the opportunity to choose vacancies throughout the state. And as the director stated, with over 1,000 vacancies, that provides us with the opportunity to give each employee a position within that 65 mile radius. So when we're looking at the term layoff, it sounds scary, but the term is actually just the way we move people from place to place. We do have positions available for these employees. As stated by the director earlier, most security employees will be absorbed by NRC, which is still on Stateville's actual land.
And as you look at the process of offering jobs, whether it be in that facility or another correctional facility, what can you do to guarantee that individuals will not have to take a cut in pay to go into those positions? I mean, because there are only so many sergeants, so many lieutenants, so many whatever it may be. What are we doing to ensure that there's as little disruption as possible? Because if we're expecting them to drive 60 miles back and forth 2 hours a day, that's an additional cost as well. So
I can't ensure that everybody will not potentially have to take a reduction. I can't promise that. What I can say is that the vacancies that we have available will be offered to each and every person, so they're not fully out of a job, so they're not on unemployment or not working for the state anymore. Those options will be there, and I understand the drive is a factor that plays into that. But those vacancies are out there and available, and again, if needed, those can be expanded to other agencies, not to just DOC. It is our hope and intent to keep everybody with DOC because, as you stated, we don't want to lose anyone else in this process. We want to keep them with us. But if that's an option that they choose, that option is out there as well.
I look at the current state of hiring, not just in DOC, throughout the state of Illinois, private, public, business, municipalities, whatever it may be, is tough right now. And as we're looking at moving another facility into the region, we already can't hire enough for the current facility, and we're looking at moving another facility right here as well. Mm-hmm. I don't see where the vision is. I'm with Senator DeWitt. I think that this was something that was handed down by the administration, and I frankly wish that they were here to give us a little more information on their reasoning for this. And that's not a political statement. I just think that you were put in front of us to give answers to a decision that was made by someone else, and it's certainly frustrating. Should be frustrating to you and frustrating to us as well up here. So. Any additional questions? I'm sure I'll have more questions as we go along the way. Okay.
Just you talked about security personnel. Does that include non-security personnel as well?
So the vacancies do include non-security at all of those surrounding facilities. We did not just focus on security. So we looked at our vacancies all throughout that 65-mile radius.
Okay. Just to put a fine point on what I think kind of the message is here tonight is that you talked about meeting with stakeholders, Director, and certainly AFSCME is a big stakeholder in this and need to be at the table. I don't hear anybody saying that we're not welcoming a new facility that is state-of-the-art that actually does the job of rehabilitation, because that we need to do that. I think that the discussion really is centered around how it's done and the fact that it disrupts a lot of people's lives. So please take that into account and include them in the discussion.
Thank you, Senator Kaler. Okay, unless there are other questions, we will go ahead and move on to our first panel of public comments. Thank you, Director, and your team. Appreciate you being here. For our first panel, we have Raymond Soliman, Mayor of the City of Crest Hill, Jennifer Vollen-Katz, Executive Director of the John Howard Association, Alice Kim, Director of Practice, Center for the Study of Race, Politics, and Culture at the University of Illinois, Amanda Anfelt, Managing Attorney for Equip for Equality, and we added Jasmine Rubio on behalf of Representative Avalar. And if you'll state your name before your statement, we are going to try, in an effort to make sure everyone gets heard, we're going to try a two-minute timer. I'm not gonna cut you off if you can. Bring your comments to a close within a reasonable amount of time. So I appreciate you understanding that.
Raymond R. Soliman.
Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Raymond R. Soliman, and I am the mayor of the city of Crest Hill, and I thank you for the opportunity to offer my testimony tonight. As the mayor of the city of Crest Hill, I am confident to advancing our community's growth, safety, and prosperity. The proposal to demolish the outdated Stateville Correctional Center and rebuild a modern facility, coupled with the relocation of Logan Correctional Center to Stateville grounds, presents a unique opportunity to achieve several key benefits for our city. First and foremost, the demolition and reconstruction of Stateville Correctional Center will address critical infrastructure issues. Stateville, constructed in the early 20th century, suffers from severe structural and operational deficiencies. These inadequacies not only pose safety risks, but also result in higher operational costs to the state due to frequent repairs and inefficient energy use. A modern correctional facility can incorporate advanced security features, advanced building practices, and improved living conditions for incarcerated individuals, ensuring a safer environment for both staff and incarcerated individuals. We believe this upgrade will align with contemporary standards of humane treatment and correctional efficiency. Moreover, relocating Logan Correctional Center to the Stateville site will consolidate correctional services, creating operational efficiencies and reducing costs. The centralization of facilities gives the opportunity to streamline administrative functions, allowing for better resource allocation and more effective rehabilitation programs. By investing in a single state-of-the-art site, the Illinois Department of Corrections can enhance the quality and consistency of its services, ultimately fostering better outcomes for incarcerated individuals in society. From an economic perspective, this project will bring significant benefits to the city of Crest Hill. The construction phase will generate substantial employment opportunities, benefiting local businesses and boosting the city's economy. In the long term, the presence of a modern correctional facility can attract further investments in the area. Additionally, a new facility could have the potential to incorporate community-based programs that provide job training and educational opportunities for residents.
Mr. Mayor, if you could bring your comments to a close. That 2 minutes goes really fast, everyone.
Yeah, it does.
It's tough to be first, so I'll give you a little
bit,
a few more paragraphs. Okay.
It is also important to consider the humanitarian aspect of this proposal. A new facility will provide a healthier, more dignified environment for incarcerated individuals, many of whom will eventually reenter society. Improved conditions and access to comprehensive rehabilitation programs, as well as health care and educational programs due to the city of Crest Hill, close proximity to the city of Chicago, are essential for successful reintegration, ultimately benefiting the broader community by reducing the cycle of recidivism. In closing, the demolition and reconstruction of Stateville Correctional Center, along with the relocation of Logan Correctional Center, represents an investment in the future of the city of Crest Hill. It promises to deliver enhanced safety, economic growth, operational efficiency, strategic location, and improved correctional outcomes. As the mayor, I am confident that this project will serve as a catalyst for positive change, reinforcing the city of Crest Hill's reputation as a forward-thinking and resilient community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Jennifer Volen Katz.
Good evening, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak this evening. I'm the executive director of the John Howard Association. We're an independent, not-for-profit correctional oversight organization that monitors the Illinois prisons in order to advance oversight of carceral systems and to promote humane treatment and increase transparency. It's time for Illinois to stop relying on the prison system to solve complex social issues that are made worse by mass incarceration, a system that's fueled by endemic racism, poverty, and inequity. However, in the immediate, we also need to improve the conditions currently experienced by people inside our prisons. The inhumane and degrading conditions that people in our prisons experience violate their constitutional and human rights. These same conditions impact the safety and well-being of the people who work in these prisons. In order to be brief, I will abandon my written comments and just point out a few things. There are positions available for anybody who wants them. IDOC is currently very understaffed, so there are places for people to go. It's not ideal. Commuting is difficult. I recognize the sacrifice. I recognize the difficulty. But I also recognize that the world is changing, and we cannot rely on our prisons to only be a source of jobs. We have to look at our entire criminal legal system. We have to think about consequences differently. But we also should have the Department of Economic Development and Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity at this table. This shouldn't be a problem for corrections alone to solve. The state of Illinois should support its communities, should find paths forward that are going to make these communities thrive, that are going to provide opportunity for everybody in these communities without keeping people in inhumane, degrading conditions that do not lead to positive outcomes for those individuals or for their communities or for any of us. I'll stop there.
Thank you so much. Just under the time. And then we're going to go to Alice Kim, Director of Practice, Center for the Study of Race, Politics, and Culture at the University of Chicago.
Okay, thank you. I see how quickly the 2 minutes are going, so I am also will try to be quick. I have been teaching at Stateville for over 10 years with the Prison Neighborhood Arts and Education Project, and more recently also started teaching at Logan Prison. The conditions at Stateville and Logan are well documented, so I'm not going to go there, but to suffice it to say, as one student wrote in an essay, I live in a place that should be condemned. But in spite of these conditions, over the years, a thriving and robust teaching and learning community has been built at both facilities. Individuals in custody who have had the opportunity to participate in educational programs readily share how education has transformed who they are. These transformational experiences are not limited to students. I, too, have been changed. My approach to teaching has changed, as has my understanding of the possibility and promise of education. at Stateville, I've also had the privilege of teaching mixed enrollment classes that bring University of Chicago students into Stateville to learn alongside incarcerated students. I've seen how these classes have changed all of us. That through these classes, we have all become better human beings because of the opportunity to learn, teach, and grow together. So in this moment, I want to recall the Illinois Constitution, Article 1, Section 11, that says all penalties should be determined both according to the seriousness of the offense and with the objective of restoring the offender to useful citizenship. That's a quote. And I believe that that's what these educational programs offer, restoring people in custody to useful citizenship. So I think in this moment, I really want us to take all the necessary steps. This isn't about the closure per se, but what we need to be doing as we're looking to these transitions, to take all necessary steps to ensure that every individual in custody receives all the good time credit that they have earned. We need to think about who should be released in this moment. The students in my classes have earned bachelor's degrees, some have earned master's degrees, and all take their education seriously. As a society, as we seek solutions to violence in our communities, I believe we can look to them as part of this solution. So we need to look at that. We also, many of these students also have clemency petitions before the governor, and we should utilize every means available to us to provide pathways for release for those who have taken it upon themselves to become better human beings.
I'm trying to be as respectful as possible of your comments. And I want to remind everybody that we are talking about the closure of facilities and not the not necessarily just the program. So, and I'm not to this, I don't mean any disrespect.
I want to say in response to that, because what happens in this moment actually matters to every individual in custody. So
when I first came into office, I was a lock them up and throw away the key kind of guy, and I understand the purpose of reform,
okay.
So I'm with you on that.
That was the first point.
I think everybody up
point,
here is with you.
And the other concern I want to express is that
the transition
and how that unfolds really matters. So I appreciate the questions that Senator Ventura raised, because those are the questions I think that as an educator and that our students are also expressing.
And I think
how
we
the
all
transition
care about that,
happens
so.
Matters.
Yes. So. Thank you. And I didn't mean any disrespect. I just want to make sure that we're taking that into account. Amanda, I'm going to mispronounce your last name. Ant Holt?
Yes, you got it.
Okay. Managing Attorney at Equip for Equality.
Thank you.
And we just went through the facility, Senator Kaler and I, so we understand the issues that you may be talking about.
Thank you. Equip for Equality is an independent... Closer.
Yes.
Equip for Equality is an independent disability rights organization that serves as the state's federally mandated protection and advocacy system. Under federal statute, as the PNA system for Illinois, we have authority to enter facilities, public or private, to investigate the treatment of people with disabilities and concerns for abuse and neglect. We have been monitoring the treatment of people with physical disabilities at Stateville since 2018. In each inspection, we have found that the physical structure and conditions place people with physical disabilities at severe risk of harm. We last inspected the facility in April of this year and found stark violations of federal law and federal regulations as to the housing of people with disabilities. A few examples of the problems we observed include dozens of people with disabilities held in inaccessible housing, inaccessible and unsafe cells. People with physical disabilities housed in upper deck cells, having to navigate steep stairs to get out. We saw people unable to exit the facility, their housing unit, and stuck in their cells because of the exterior exits, meaning no safe fire exit. We saw mold and leaks throughout with people with very significant medical needs and medical vulnerabilities at risk for infection. We saw birds inside the housing units. We saw bird waste on wheelchairs. We have people with open sores and open wounds who cannot shower to wash themselves. So we're not talking about rehabilitation here. We're talking about very basic safety for people with medical vulnerabilities and people with disabilities. And wow, when I practiced this, I was at 2 minutes, but I'll stop there.
It's the passion that comes through, and I certainly understand. Jasmine Rubio, on behalf of Representative Avalar, thank you for coming.
Thank you again for having me. Again, this is a statement from State Representative Dagmara Avalar. She states, the state must address the inhumane conditions within correctional facilities as both a moral imperative and part of our fundamental obligation to preserve and defend human dignity. The governor's recent proposal offers an opportunity to prioritize the well-being of those incarcerated alongside the safety of our prison workforce, while recognizing that changes must be made, the impact of the governor's plan on long-time workers cannot be understated. Stateville is a major economic driver for the local community, and many of its dedicated professionals lack the means to relocate or endure long commutes. Our office has fielded phone calls from constituents who work at Stateville who are concerned about the closing of the facility. During these calls and in talking to community members, it has been clear to me that the facility cannot close in September. Therefore, I am asking that the facility do not close in September as the plan seems to recommend. This plan, if not implemented correctly, may represent a real threat to the livelihoods and well-being of the impacted workers, as well as the families and communities who depend on them. As we proceed, it is of a paramount importance to ensure transparency, stakeholder engagement, and an equitable transition for affected staff. The needed construction of new facilities should be undertaken with the least possible disruption to incarcerated individuals and facility employees. We must ensure that this major project benefits the workers, community members, and incarcerated individuals who are most impacted. This is a priority issue for the 85th District, and I will remain vigilant and present opportunities for my community to engage with the process as it unfolds. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Do we have questions for this panel? I have one question for the mayor, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm probably gonna.
It's all right.
I served in local government as well before I got this position. Thinking about Lincoln, Illinois, if you were the mayor of Lincoln, would you be as positive about this plan?
I've been mayor for 16 years. This is the third time I've been dealing with the closure of Stateville Penitentiary, so I'm well aware of everything. But as the mayor of the city of Crest Hill, I am looking at the end product, the final goal. It could be a big improvement for not only Department of Corrections, not only for the incarcerated individuals, but for the city of Crest Hill, both economically, humanely, and any other adjective you'd like to add to that.
So, good answer. I'm sure that's not the answer that the mayor of Lincoln would give. Senator Ventura.
Yes, I have one question for Alice Kim. And thank you all for your testimony. Do you feel that the other facilities in the state can uphold the individuals who would be transferring from education programs today? And do you feel that there would be a limited amount of disruption that they could continue?
I think that that's the worry. That with the transition, what that would mean for education, and that was the second point I had hoped to make, was really to discuss keeping that a priority, because if other facilities, well, one, we won't be able to travel in the same way that we can travel to Stateville and the community that we have built at Stateville, as you know, matters. So that's a real worry. So we really want to be very involved in any process of transition so that whatever facility people end up going to is readily equipped, right? So that we don't go to other facilities and have to wait to do programming, but they're already set up to be able to hold people in that way.
I have one quick question for Jennifer Volen-Katz. Do you have a list of facilities that you believe the currently incarcerated individuals can be moved to, because we have a lot of deferred maintenance at a lot of other facilities? And so are we going to move them into a situation where they're going to be moved to another place and file a lawsuit when they get there? Legitimate
fair question. Yeah, no, I think you can use the CGL report really as a roadmap. You can see, first of all, you know, we have to recognize there's a lot of excess capacity in the system right now. We have about 30,000 people in prison in the state of Illinois in a system that has rated capacity of close to 43,000. You know, individual beds. So we simply don't need all these prisons. We have to be doing things differently. We have to do it differently for everybody. And I know that that's an unpopular sentiment, but I also know that it's bigger than any one facility, and it's bigger than just the prison system. It's thinking more holistically, what are the best uses of resources for the state of Illinois. So I think you can look at the CGL report, you can see where there's capacity, and you can see where there is a lot less deferred maintenance, right, and what year the facilities were built. Illinois River, Southwest are in pretty good shape, have capacity. I also think we have the opportunity to close some of the juvenile facilities and hand them over to the adult system, which we have done successfully before in the state of Illinois. That's how we stood up Kewaunee Life Skill Reentry Center. So there are existing facilities that could be better utilized in order to take people out of harm's way and structures that are literally falling down around their ears.
Okay. So... So do you believe that Stateville should be rebuilt?
It's a complicated question.
I know it's a large question.
But here's what I'll say. This location offers a lot of opportunity, and we need to put people in spaces that are humane and rehabilitative, and we have very few of those in the state of Illinois. So we do need to think about how to create spaces that are smaller, that are geographically sensible, that can be staffed, that have community resources available to them. We need to do this differently and smartly, and this location has proven that it has a lot to offer, and it's a good place for us to keep people who are, you know, in the criminal justice system.
So you said smaller, and they're saying 1,500, and they're also saying Logan moving up here. So, I mean,
I don't understand the 1,500 when I just laid out that there is so much excess capacity. I don't know if there is a design I'm unaware of that houses people in smaller, individualized settings. I can't speak to any of that. The numbers don't make sense to me. What I can tell you about moving Logan up here is that's quite, and they're not going to like this in Lincoln, but it also makes a lot of sense. 34% of the women who are incarcerated in the Illinois Department of Corrections come from Cook County or the Collar Counties. So this will put them closer to home. I have been in Logan when pieces of ceiling have fallen down, you know, feet from where I'm standing. You know, it is not a safe place for people to be. And we haven't even talked about coal, you know, it being a coal-powered facility or the water systems failing or any of that. So I do think that there is benefit to having facilities that are smaller and sensible and humane in Crest Hill.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Senator DeWitt.
Sorry. I have to ask one follow-up. You mentioned 34% of the women incarcerated in Illinois come from the metropolitan area. What about the other 64, 65%? Who all come from downstate? Why are a majority of those women going to be moved to the metropolitan Chicago area?
So I think there's opportunity to think about it. We still have Decatur Correctional Center, which is 30 minutes away from Logan, very close by. Currently, there's about 300 women, I believe, give or take, housed at Decatur. The rated capacity for that facility is 700. So there's opportunity for women who are from that area to stay in that area while still putting women who are from Cook County and the surrounding area closer to home.
Yeah, I keep hearing the transitional process as part of that decision-making process, but I'm not sure what relocating a majority of the women currently incarcerated in women's facilities in Illinois, moving them out of their comfort zone, if you will, where they're from, simply because someone believes the transitional capabilities are more available to them in a metropolitan area that they frankly have no familiarity with.
I mean, I think the
how
goal,
to live and what to do.
Yeah, I think the goal is always to keep people as close to home as possible, right? But I know that there are other considerations. The Illinois Department of Corrections leads with security classification and things of that nature. So it's difficult. We are not currently set up to accommodate, you know, geographic proximity to family and community. I hope that that is a goal that we all share in the state of Illinois. But for now, I think that, you know, if 34% of the women are from the northern part of the state and they are housed in the northern part of the state, I think we end up keeping, you know, the women who are from central and southern Illinois pretty much in central Illinois at Decatur.
Thank you.
And I'm sure, I don't know how old Decatur is. I'll probably have to talk to the Department of Corrections after this to see what the legitimate availability of that, because they're different levels of crime and things of that sort. So I'm sure they have to take that into account. I appreciate you all being here and look forward to speaking to you in the future. If you have any additional comments, we'd look forward to hearing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Panel number two. Call forward Mike Newman, AFSCME Council 31, Martha Merrill, AFSCME Council 31, Charles Mathis, Stateville employee, and James Porter, Stateville employee. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna put Martha on panel three. And we're going to bring Eugene Washington up for this panel.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Michael Newman. I'm the Deputy Director for AFSCME Council 31, which represents most of the Department of Corrections employees. AFSCME is strongly opposed to the proposed facility closure of Stateville. We strongly support building a new facility at Stateville, but the proposal that has been submitted to close the facility as soon as September not only lacks critical details and information about how the closure will be operationalized, but the plan itself is needlessly and drastically disruptive to the employees of the department, to individuals who are currently incarcerated at Stateville and to their families, and to the entire IDOC system. Moving forward with a viable plan is extremely problematic, and frankly, the plan that's been presented is irresponsible. It's also disrespectful to employees, to the incarcerated individuals, and frankly, to the COGFA process as well. The correctional systems already show signs of distress. The department's dismissive assurance that its plan will be implemented to simply, and I've heard this many times in response to specific questions, the response is, we will minimize disruption, period. That's the detailed response that's provided. That's wholly unacceptable. The extremely rushed closure timeline should be slowed to ensure that there are sound answers to the many questions raised during this COGFA process, and for that reason alone, this commission should not approve this plan. The harmful consequences of closing Stateville almost immediately, years prior to the construction of a new facility, and we've been told 3 to 5 years. When we talk to CDB, it sounds like it's much more likely 5 years, regardless of when the first shovel is going to go in. That's the information we've been given. Those consequences are far clearer than any argument in favor of the department's plan. Explanations put forth by the department for not continuing Stateville operations during construction are completely invalid, given the department's stated intent to build a new facility on grounds adjacent to Stateville and not within the current walls. The simple fact of the matter is that there are critical missing pieces of information. There are no design plans, construction's several years away, and actual demolition of the current facility is 5 years away. What little information the department submitted to the committee for review is incomplete, rife with problems. The department should go back and return with a real plan that brings forward a transparent and complete proposal for evaluation that adequately addresses the vast number of questions and issues that remain outstanding. That said, as the following testimony from staff and former staff of Stateville will clearly demonstrate, when weighing the cost of maintaining operations during the rebuild against the disruption caused by closing the facility, maintaining operations throughout the construction of a new facility is by far the most reasonable and rational approach moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Charles Mathis.
Good evening, Copper. My name is Charles Mathis, and I've been working for Stateville for the past 9 years. I've been employed as a correctional officer at Stateville Correctional Center. I am here tonight to oppose the department plan to close Stateville during construction. Although I am all for building a new facility on Stateville's ground, I started my career with IDOC in May 2015. Taking the job with the state was one of the best decisions I could have made. Working at Stateville has allowed me to provide for my family and take care of them. For that, we have been truly blessed. When I woke up in March and heard about the department's plans to close Stateville, it raised a lot of worries and concerns for my family and me about our future. Like some of my coworkers, I have a long commute to work. I live on the south side of Chicago, which is a 45-minute commute to Stateville on a good day, without any traffic or construction on Highway I-80. In this statement to COCFA, the department has stated that there will be lots of vacant positions within 65 miles of Stateville. A handful of those positions sound like they might be closer to home, like the Joliet Treatment Center, but many of the jobs Stateville employees could get would probably be at Sheridan Correctional Center or Pontiac Correctional Center. Commuting to either facility could take me an hour and a half to 2 hours to drive one way. That kind of commute round trip would take an enormous toll on my mind and body. It would take away from the precious time that I have with my family and friends. I think I speak for all my coworkers when I say that their commute like that way be nearly impossible to justify. When I hear everything the department has said to the world and to its dedicated employees who report to work every day and about this so-called temporary closure will work, it's clear that IDOC hasn't thought about how closing Stateville for several years would impact my life, my family's life, the lives of my coworker, which makes me feel like there is no plan at all. Since we're the workers with the skills and experience that the department will need to retain if it's going to be successful to open a new facility. Show of hands of who in the crowd who takes a commute 40 plus miles. Even though the department did not take all these factors into account, COFA still can. And I urge you to do so. Please vote against the recommended IDOC's plan to close Stateville during construction. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. A lot of fans out there today. James Porter.
Good evening. My name is James Porter. I'm an employee of Stateville Correctional Center. I've been there for the last 25 years, and I'm a correctional lieutenant. One of the biggest concerns for nearly the 1,000 employees of Stateville is a lack of real information as to what is going to happen with the nearly 500 staff who at this are being threatened by this closure. It is wrong that the department has not specifically informed about vacancies within the NRC. The NRC cannot accommodate all the security and non-security staff whose jobs are in jeopardy if the department moves forward with in September closure. Management has not been the least forthcoming as to how they plan to staff the NRC or where the staff will be located. Will they place additional non-security staff in offices that are already too full? For security and non-security staff that cannot offer positions at the NRC, where will they go? This has caused tremendous stress and anxiety for those of us who work in a career in the Department of Correction. The department claims that there are sufficient positions at nearby facilities. Merely stating that isn't enough. Because the department continues to avoid answering questions raised, staff at Stateville are extremely skeptical of this reassurance. According to the department's data, there are only 29 non-security vacancies combined at the two facilities within a 30-mile radius of Stateville and only 39 vacancies for security combined. How did those numbers add up to sufficient positions? The department must be held accountable to provide real answers to the relocation options for impacting employees when Stateville is closed. Closing Stateville will have a disparity impact on jobs of IDOC employees who are women and of people of color, as Stateville has the most diverse workforce in the department with the highest percentage of female and black employees. So to conclude, the department has been less than transparent and forthcoming in this process. For the department to want to close Stateville with no plan and no answers to base the virtual importance of this question, it is made painfully clear that Stateville employees are not valued. I urge that you vote no and send a clear message to the department that their lack of planning is unacceptable in the individuals and the lives of all those involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, James. Eugene, please state your name and go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Eugene Washington. I'm the president of ASME Local 1866. I stand proud of my members at Stateville Correctional Center. One key point the department ignores and is caught for fouling and dismisses when questioned is that Stateville is a northern region hub for the DOC and serves as the central role in the department's overall operation. How do you close Stateville when it's the parent institution for the Northern Reception Center, the Minimum Security Unit, the Crossroads Adult Transitional Center, and the Lawndale Adult Transition Center? Stateville is used for key operational roles directly linked to these other facilities, including training, record retention, and medical testing, as well as new hiring, processing, and drug testing. Closing Stateville this summer will disrupt operations at these facilities, and the department has put little thought into the time, planning, and resources it would take to continue these vital functions if Stateville is closed. From the perspective of the people who do the work every day, this proposal is totally destructive, disrespectful, and very disastrous. The staff should not be faced with displacement, but should be thanked for the work they do every day, countless hours away from home and family, and keeping our community safe. The most reasonable and practical approach would be to keep Stateville open during the rebuilding process. Stateville also serves as the communications hub. The communications center connects satellite facilities and communicates with transit teams on the roads and other IDOC facilities. You just can't close down these communications operations, and the department doesn't have any answers when pressed. Lastly, Stateville is used by the Northern Reception Center in multiple ways. Visits to individuals housed in the NRC occur at Stateville because the NRC does not have secure rooms to accommodate visitations. All mail and packages addressed to the NRC and MSU are processed at Stateville because both spaces safety equipment limitations at the NRC. Also, the Stateville Medical Unit serves as the Urgent and Emergency Care Center for the NRC and the Minimum Security Unit. The department has no answers as to how these key NRC functions will continue if Stateville is closed. That's probably because they can't. Closing Stateville will eliminate key operations for satellite facilities. This is a highly problematic situation that appears to be ignored by the department. It's either because they can't figure out solutions
or they don't understand the complexity of the institution and the work we do. There is no plan, and for operational, security, and safety reasons, Stateville should be kept open. Thank you.
Thank you.
For first question, Senator Ventura.
Yes, thank you all for your testimony. I think you put it very well. Mr. Newman, you had talked about opposing it while closing the operations while they're building. And I think that's really what it comes down to is the transition. When you've discussed things with DOC, have they provided a seat at the table to discuss something, an alternative to closing in September?
No. As I tried to indicate a few minutes ago, the answers that we get, first of all, there's been no openness at all to anything other than the plan that was presented to you all and to us. We really can't get answers. When all the questions come up about programming, about safety and security, we really can't get answers. When I heard a few minutes ago about capacity of other facilities, it's not just a matter of beds. It's also a matter of staff. If a facility doesn't have the staff for the sake of safety and security of the individuals in custody and the staff who work there, you can't just bring more individuals in. You have to have the adequate staff. There's been no answers on any of that.
And this question is for any of the workers. DOC keeps pointing to the fact that we can't build one prison first, keeping things open because of this court case about the quality of life. Do you feel that there are things that could happen right now using other housing like B housing or other facilities to house a number of individuals to keep Stateville open today, during transition?
Actually, before anybody else answers, I'd like to speak to the court case because we've spent some time finding out about the court case. There have been several meetings, settlement discussions. There is, as my understanding, they're nowhere close to any kind of a settlement as far as, and there's nothing scheduled before a judge for the judge to issue, I think it's Judge Wood, to issue some kind of an injunction. We're very confident that were that to happen, and we don't believe it will, but it would not be, the judge would not order it to be so immediate that it would be anywhere close to September. And as I think it may have been you, Senator Ventura, but one of the commission members here stated, why are we trying to get ahead of whatever a court might order? If the court orders it, then everybody has to deal with that. But why would we, if it's a bad situation, why would we say, let's make it happen even earlier so that so a judge won't tell us to do it? But I'm sorry, I went on so long. If you could, I think there are other parts of the question that others...
Do you think that during the transition there are things that could be utilized at Stateville to keep it open for at least some of the individuals incarcerated, maybe not all of them, like our ADA and disabled individuals may need to be transferred, but are there capabilities, do you feel there's capabilities at the prison today to house the other ones?
Yes, the current state of the quarter units can last. The quarter units are not falling down. We're not walking in and feeling like the roof is going to fall on top of us. It can stand. The X-House can stand. There are buildings that can't be utilized until this rebuild is done.
Okay, thank you. And then if we were to shut down Stateville proper and only have NRC, do they currently have a kitchen or dietary means today?
At this time, the Stateville dietary is totally good and operational. The NRC dietary at this time is in the process of being rebuilt and revamped and have trailers in to, we don't know what day they're going to start working.
Okay. And then is NRC meant for long-term placement of incarcerated individuals?
No.
Thank you.
Senator, Any other questions? I have a couple questions. So has there been, and this is to whoever can answer, has there been any discussion with the department on non-security vacancies? And can you give me an idea of what a non-security, what type of work the non-security individuals are doing?
Well, in terms of the vacancies, and I'm going to let Gino answer the second part of that question, but you know, in the CAGFA report, they talk about 1,000 vacancies for Stateville that are in, I think, within 65 miles. In the proposal that they was presented about to Logan, about Logan, same 1,000 vacancies. Now they're downstate all of a sudden, but it's the same 1,000 vacancies. I also want to, when they talk about within 65 miles, I was thinking about Charles, for instance, who lives on the south side of Chicago. We have, I should say, very frequently, it's really common because of the understaffing for staff not to work 8 hours, but to have to work double shifts, 16 hours. So imagine Charles or many other employees working 16 hours, driving 2 hours each way, these 4 hours to sleep, if, certainly unlike me, if you can get home and go to sleep immediately. Let alone eating anything. And that's when they talk about other facilities available, that's what our members are facing. So, but in terms of the non-security, I think I could go through quite a few of these, but Gina, why don't you?
Give me a basic, you know, 30,000 feet, what types of jobs are we talking about?
Office jobs, dietary, supply, medical, to name a few.
Okay.
And education, counseling, clinical.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. So when you were discussing earlier, we discussed a number of things that Stateville currently provides for the NRC, like mailroom. I think we were talking, laundry, record keeping. Sounds like there's a number of different things that they rely on the Stateville facility for. Have you heard anything in this plan that would provide an opportunity for those to be at the NRC?
No, we haven't heard of any plan. It can conducively happen.
So it would take a lot of investment in the NRC to get it up to where it would need to be to do all the functions that
they would have to build another NRC to replace Stateville Administration Building.
Okay. Thank you all for coming up.
If I could just add, and I know co-chairs Davidsmeyer and Kaler did a tour of the facility earlier, and I heard reference to when you speak about investment. I mean, reference the CGL report, which is several years old. And as I understand what took place on the tour, many of the things in the CGL report the repairs have been made, at least well enough to get us through this interim period until the new facility is built. So to rely on the numbers in the CGL report at this point, I think it's disingenuous.
Yeah, so... And I didn't realize that report was 7 years old, and I certainly...
I'm sorry, several years old, I said.
Several.
Not quite
okay,
seven.
Okay, I said
but
seven.
Yeah.
Several years old, and all of a sudden it seems like an urgent thing to shut down the facility now. So I will give the department an opportunity to... I'll talk to you guys afterwards about that. Thank you.
Thank you
all for coming up. Our next group we have... I think we have Martha Merrill, Matthew Zamatis, Ann McBee, Dorsey Heldonia.
We've got one more walk-up, and then we also have Jennifer Martino-Perrin. She's a former rep.
Yep.
That she's at Camille County. I don't know where you want to put her in here. Do you want to bring her up with this panel or with the next panel? Well, we thought we'd try to get her up a little quicker.
Okay. And if I could... Our former colleague, Jennifer Bertino-Tarrant, if you would like to come up and be with this group, we'd love to have you.
Can we do a quick announcement and ask this person to move their car? They're blocking somebody in.
All right. I've got a license plate. Somebody is being blocked in. It's a blue Ford Escape, license plate DU61005. All right. Founder, good. Okay. Let's go ahead and start with... Martha, do you want to start?
Sure. Good evening, members of the commission. My name is Martha Merrill, and I am the Director of Research and Employee Benefits for AFSCME Council 31. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this matter of significant importance and consequence for the Department of Corrections, its employees, and the individuals in custody. Let me start off by saying, in response to the many of the written comments submitted, that I don't believe that there are very many residents of this state that think permanently closing Stateville and releasing its entire incarcerated population is the right path forward. Moreover, I suspect that if the facility were permanently closed, as proponents argue, those same organizations would be in front of this commission in years' time voicing complaint that the incarcerated individuals from the northern counties are being held too far from their families and their communities. A northern correctional facility is necessary in Illinois. Stateville must be rebuilt, and we support the capital investment to construct a modern, safe, and state-of-the-art correctional center. This could and should represent important progress for a correctional system too long marked with deteriorating infrastructure. However, after asking questions of the department, reading their materials submitted, and listening to their testimony, there is no question in our minds that closing Stateville in September is a viable proposal. Let our testimony today serve as a record that moving forward with this plan, with so few details and preparation in place, is reckless. The department is entirely incapable of pursuing its own plan of action without putting lives and livelihoods at risk. Everything we say here, as well as the written reports and testimony, support maintaining Stateville's operations during the construction process. This path is the least disruptive and most reasonable of the two choices, and the department has failed to provide a serious argument otherwise. For all the reasons we've identified, for all the questions left unanswered, for all the logistics not in place, and for all the employees of the department who deserve to be treated with respect, I urge this commission to reject the department's recommendation to close Stateville Correctional Center.
Thank you. Matthew, please state your name and go ahead.
Good evening. I am Lieutenant Zamatis. I also work at Stateville Correctional Center. I am assigned to the education building and would like to speak on the effects that the closure would have on the educational program, which is unparalleled across the rest of the state of the prison system. Stateville has more education programming and more classes than any other facility in Illinois. We work with multiple universities, Northwestern, DePaul, and North Park Theological Seminary. These institutions provide a variety of basic and secondary academic classes and post-secondary educational classes. Stateville also provides important non-degree educational programming. These programs have 120 incarcerated individuals, including we have over 90 back there at one time at times, with over 20 volunteers, professors, and educational staff. Any closure of Stateville, even over a short period, would harm these individuals because no other facility can provide this. Also, if you move these individuals to other facilities, it will take them out of environment. We've seen issues at other facilities within the past year. Closing the facility would irreparably harm the ability of incarcerated individuals to progress in these programs. I strongly advocate for the committee to recommend against closing the facility for these reasons. I concede my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anna?
Hello. My name is Anna McBee,
And after 32 years of state service, with the last 27 of those years spent at Stateville Correctional Center, I retired last week. In addition to the vast educational programs, Stateville also has multiple vocational programs, reentry counselors, and other vital curricula that is not available at other facilities in the state. These programs range from career and technical education, such as the Barber College, volunteer services, creative art, choir, and religious Bible studies, to a full music recording studio donated by Common in 2021, as well as a variety of programming focused on rehabilitation and reentry, such as our life skills, anger management, substance abuse programs, and counseling services. I want to highlight the impacts that two of these programs have and share what our incarcerated population would lose should DOC close Stateville in September. The first is Stateville's Barber School. Incarcerated individuals in the program learn a life skill that benefits them both during their incarceration as well as once they are released. It is an incredible program that changes lives, and for current participants as well as those on the waiting list, it would be a tremendous loss if this program were to end in September. Additionally, Stateville's recording studio, aptly named Rebirth of Sound, is also the only one of its kind in the entire department. This studio allows incarcerated individuals to learn the technical skills needed to make and record music. It's a music school. Individuals are taught musical theory and learn to play different instruments and read music. Even for those incarcerated for many more years, the studio provides a purpose and the ability to create something that they can share. A key factor to the training and rehabilitation programming offered at Stateville to reduce recidivism is its location to the Chicagoland area. Visitation and other forms of contact between incarcerated individuals and their families have positive impacts, including reduced recidivism, improved participation in programming, and improved health and behavior. 71% of Stateville's population are from the Cook County and Collar counties. Moving these individuals to facilities further away from home will undoubtedly and needlessly affect the ability for family to visit them. I urge the committee to recommend not to immediately close Stateville and to keep the facility open while a new one is built. Thank you.
Thank you. Dorsey, can you state your name and go ahead?
Sure. Good evening, everyone. I would like to thank everyone behind me who has shown up today to show solidarity in everything that we're here to fight for. My name is Dorsey Paldonia, and I have been a staff assistant at the healthcare unit at the Northern Reception Center, which is a satellite facility of Stateville Correctional Center since April of 2023. I'm opposed to the department's plans to close Stateville during construction because I believe that doing so will significantly disrupt healthcare access for individuals at Stateville, the NRC, and MSU. For those of you who don't know, the healthcare unit at the NRC is basically a triage clinic. So we rely on the medical facilities and staff at Stateville for more advanced care while individuals are at the NRC awaiting a transfer. At the NRC, we rely on Stateville for its dialysis chairs, its more advanced dental office, more robust physical therapy equipment, and optometry services, amongst other things. We also rely on Stateville's medical staff. Where there's a heavy intake day at the NRC, for example, Stateville's mental health professionals come over to help support our team. The MSU, which is a minimum security unit at Stateville located near the NRC, also depends on Stateville's medical facilities. Sometimes individuals at the MSU have chronic health issues or cancers which require access to services and equipment available at Stateville, but not at the NRC. For individuals in custody at Stateville, the medical staff who work there, this plan will pose an even bigger problem. Right now, out of our current population at Stateville, about 60% are people who are on medical hold. Individuals on medical hold depend on extensive medical facilities located on the grounds of Stateville or hospitals nearby in Chicago, specifically UIC. If Stateville is closed and the individuals currently receiving care at the medical center or in Chicago are transferred to other locations, will they continue to have access to the same quality of care available at Stateville or the Chicago hospitals? Will these individuals be able to withstand longer transport times to see their doctor? Will there even be staffing to be able to transport so many individuals safely? If individuals are forced to switch doctors, how will the department make that work? There is also logistically not enough room to accommodate all of Stateville's medical employees and their equipment at the NRC. So where are we supposed to go? For all of these reasons, I am asking this commission to vote against the department's plans and to recommend the DOC keep Stateville open during this construction. Thank you.
Thank you. And now Jennifer Bertino-Tarrant, executive for Will County.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the department.
You have to get that
closer.
Yes,
right.
Please.
That's not something I'm used to. Thank you to the Department of Correction for being here. Thank you to my former colleagues for also taking the time to be here. We get to claim Senator Ventura and Senator Sims as Will County proud. I am happy that that you have joined us, and like the mayor of Crest Hill, probably not Logan, I fully support the redevelopment and a new facility here in Will County. Obviously, as a county executive, I look forward to the jobs. I look forward to the economic development. However, like has already been stated, I would like to see a tighter timeline before a demolition and a rebuild. I know the balance of managing with very different perspectives. I listen to the Department of Correction, I nod my head, and I listen to our friends in the union, and I nod my head. But what I can tell you from my experience with working with multiple unions and thousands of Will County employees, I have one policy that has worked for me well, and that the unions are my partners. I know it may not be a perfect result for everyone, but I implore the state as they develop their plan to follow that policy and listen actively to our unions. Will County is eager to work with the Department of Correction on the future of this site. So thank you.
Thank you.
Don't ask me any questions.
Senator Ventura.
Yes, thank you. Good to see you, Lieutenant. My question is to you. Do you feel that the community built by the education programs has improved the behavior at Stateville as well as encouraged the non-education individuals to obtain higher or different types of education?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things there is back at the education building, all of my staff have most of them have more than 20 or 25 years. They have developed a mutual respect with my staff and with themselves, and they carry themselves to a higher standard. That's why we have had minimal issues back in the education building versus other institutions, which have had staff assaults and things like that, which we don't want to happen. You're also going to remove the individual in custody out of their environment, and that could create another dangerous situation.
Which leads to my next question. So if these individuals are sent to multiple facilities throughout the state, breaking up this community, do you think this will be a positive or negative impact on corrections as a whole, as well as the individuals enrolled in these programs?
Anytime we've had any type of, I have over 20 years in the department, 7 as a lieutenant. Anytime we've done any kind of reclassification or anything like that, and you start moving these individuals around, they do have to adjust to their environment, and sometimes it's a tougher adjustment for some of them. We have a chemistry there that no other facility could match. So it would probably be best to keep these individuals in our facility. They have the best opportunity. We're able to provide over 90 of them at a time, almost 100 of them at a time, to be in our education building at one time, plus a law library, plus the barbershop. Thank you.
So I think we heard, thank you. I think we heard during our tour that out of the 420-some incarcerated individuals that are there, I think over 400 are on grade A, which is pretty impressive. What level of security is that facility? Is it a max?
We are a max.
Yeah. So we
are able to keep them stable at our facility because we're able to provide the most amount of students for these individuals in custody.
Yeah.
No other, like Sheridan and these other facilities, they can't provide that.
Yeah. So could IDOC offer priority placement for the individuals that are being transferred in order to minimize disruption? I mean, priority placement into other programs and other facilities? Would that minimize disruption?
No, because the other facilities aren't built for to have 10 classrooms. They just don't have it. So we're able to have, like I said, over 90 of them at a time with over 20 volunteers, professors, and educators. And some of these other facilities only have two or three classrooms available, and you're not going to put individuals in custody 30, 35 feet. That's not a conducive educational environment. These guys have their best opportunity here.
Okay.
If I could just add, there are wait lists across the state for educational programming, and I would suspect that if transferred state-built individuals were prioritized and able to jump those wait lists, that would have kind of a domino or consequence to the individuals who are at the transferred facilities who have been waiting for educations and programming.
Thank you. And then one other thing. When you mentioned the healthcare unit, it's not... my understanding is that the healthcare unit in the, I'm going to use the wrong term, NRC.
That's correct.
Is more of the prompt care to the hospital that's in Stateville. Correct. I mean they catch the initial stuff, the sneezes and the fevers, and Stateville does the dialysis and things of that sort. Correct.
Yes, actually, anytime that we have individuals in custody that come through the Northern Reception Center, we do assess, the medical staff does assess their health care needs, whether it's, and mental health does the same thing too when they first come in. They also see counselors. They also see TASC, which is out of Sheridan, which is the drug and alcohol treatment program. So they are assessed in the beginning. Now, if those individuals in custody are held at the NRC for any amount of time, and there's, let's say, somebody falls out of bed or anything of that nature, somebody came in with an open wound because he was a parole violator, those guys are brought down to the NRC's healthcare unit where the nurses do take care of their dressings. They get their medication on a daily basis as well if it's something that's needed. If they're coming from Will County or any other of the collar counties, we make sure that their medication is also with them. And then at that point, let's say if an individual in custody comes in and says, you know what, I had glasses, I need to see the eye doctor, we make that appointment with Stateville because they have the resources, the equipment, and also the staff to assess their eye vision so that if we need to order them glasses, it's taken care of there at Stateville. Stateville's our mothership. The NRC is a satellite. All we do is process all the northern region, and Stateville is our home.
Okay, so if Stateville is no longer there, no longer operational, you would need additional staff to transport people to other facilities, an eye doctor somewhere else, or
We do have an optometrist on call or that is at Stateville who's actually there all the time. So anyone that is brought out of their cell to see the eye doctor, they are assessed right there. We don't have to send them out. Anything serious beyond, you know, getting glasses or contacts and all the necessary accessories that we'd need for that, anything beyond that is handled at Stateville, where they would make an outside appointment.
But
at the NRC...
After
September, we don't know what's going to happen because we're not getting any answers. We don't even have a picture of what this building is going to look like. We don't know where we're going to put the staff. I might lose my job if I end up moving. I don't want to move out of this area. This is my family. Everyone you see back here is my family.
I understand. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. I think we can move on. Thank you all for being here tonight. I'm going to move on to panel 4. If I pronounce your name wrong, I apologize. Susan Lucci, James Soto, Ralph Portwood, and Christina Rivers. And if you could, if we could go in that order, Susan, James, Ralph, and Christina, and then please state your name prior to making your comments. Start with Susan.
Hi, good evening. My name is Susan Lucci. I live up in Oak Park. I appreciate your intention and the space to welcome and make sure that a lot of voices are heard, and I really appreciate hearing from the last few employees of Stateville who expressed care about a voice that I think is missing to date. I don't disagree with the concerns that we've heard from the employees of IDOC and their families that were just referenced, but a significant voice is missing, and I'd like to remind us of the purpose and mission of IDOC. It's not an employer, right? It is in the business of taking care of folks impacted by our justice system. So where are their voices being heard? I did hear the acting director mentioned meaningful conversations with them, but to my knowledge, those haven't happened. And I think as frustrated as everyone in this room is about the potential of closing, I imagine, and I know some of these guys, the 420 or so guys inside and their families, are terrified, right? They are really uncertain. They don't know what's going to happen to them. And I'm also leery of trusting the IDOC promises and assurances that they will be individually consulted before they are transferred because, for example, in the last few weeks, their yard time has been cut in half. The educational programs have been cut in half because of supposed shortages. So anyway, I hear a lot of agreement. I don't hear anybody standing up to keep the status quo. But how and when, I am also concerned about the timeline. And any decision made without consulting those 420 humans in there, many of whom have degrees, they are rehabilitated, many have clemency petitions on the governor's desk that we're waiting for. There's thousands of those sitting there. So please extend your decision to include their voices as well. Thank you.
Thank you. James.
My name is James Soto.
Get that microphone real close.
My name is James Soto. Many know me by Jimmy Soto. I was recently released from Stateville in December. I was wrongfully convicted for 42 years, and I was exonerated. The majority of my time was spent at Stateville, so I know all of the harms that it can do to you because of the environment there, the toxic water, the black mold, et cetera, that you all know and heard about. But I want to add a personal note. Upon my release, recently I had blood work drawn. Ms. Volin Katz and Mike Newman were on a panel with me, and they were aware when I got the blood drawn. Well, I had elevated levels of lead in my system caused by drinking the water in Stateville, which has now got me pre-diabetic and some circulatory problems. So my question is this. Okay, I'm in favor of rebuilding Stateville. But to close it completely, I understand that can take away jobs, the employees. It's going to cause disruption all the way around the board. But if we do keep it partially open, what are they going to do for those individuals in custody while it's kept open? Are they going to be given that bottled water? Is there going to be a cleanup of the facility? I mean, like a real thorough cleanup where they don't have to live in those conditions for any prolonged period of time. It's unnecessary. And so I just want to be that voice, which Ms. Lucci talked about, to tell you that, you know, it does affect you years and years and years of being in there, and that we need to consider that when we talk about these closures or partial closures or whatever the case may be, because it seems it's going to be inevitable. And so I just want to say that, you know, I would hope that we have pathways for release, but I know that's not the subject matter here. The matter is, you know, there's people here, human beings on both sides of the fence, the staff, the employees, and then those incarcerated and their families. So this is really a human issue, and I hope that the humanity comes across, that you realize that there are individuals like me that have suffered already because of the water and et cetera. And so that is a concern. It should be a concern of you all as well. So thank you for hearing me out. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Ralph.
Hello, my name is Ralph Portwood.
I'm a retired correctional officer from Stateville Correctional Center. I did 29 years, 3 months at Stateville. And I also served as the union president for about 26 and a half of those years. So first and foremost, I want to make one thing clear to this room. You know, someone stole my thunder a little early about it, but I'm still going to say it. We just not Stateville employees. This is the Stateville family behind me. This is a family. So though I heard what you said, and I respect what you said, but think about the family that work at Stateville Correctional Center, the bond that we have. You know, the years and dedication that these members of our family have put into Stateville to provide services, make sure that the individuals in custody are protected, they're treated well, given medical attention, and anything they need was done under the aspect of us as a family at Stateville Correctional Center. That's first and foremost. You know, and like I said, being a union president was one thing unique about Stateville. We got the diversity, but we had such a bond there. Hell, half the inmates thought I was a union president as well. They wrote grievances to me to help with issues with cables and working conditions at the facilities. So our bond goes past the workforce. It went to the individuals that live there as well. But I've been around long enough, and with all due respect to the Department of Corrections, I've been around long enough to see us break ground on a correctional facility, buy the metal to build a correctional facility, but it was never built. Matter of fact, I think it was two of them that were supposed to build. Grayville, if I'm not mistaken, I think one was in Kankakee. Never was built. So that's what worries me. So we don't have an actual plan in place. Only thing we think about is what we saw in the past. They actually decided to build two correctional facilities, and it never took place. And that's what this sounds like right now today. It sounds the exact same language and the exact same situation we've seen years ago. They said they was going to build two facilities, and it didn't take place. And I'm not blaming the leadership of the Department of Corrections, because some of this is outside of their control. We don't know who's going to be in control of this state in 5 years. We don't know where we're going to be economically in 5 years. So to say that this plan is going to take 5 to 7 years, the people that are sitting here right now today are not going to be the ones that's making a decision. So we are putting our futures in the hand of individuals we don't even know yet, probably. So I'm worried about that. I'm worried about the future. I'm worried about the fact that Stateville Correctional Center is historic to the Department of Corrections. It's historic to seeing generations of staff having their kids and grandkids work there and continue on the tradition of providing security, custody, and control for the Illinois Department of Corrections. Let's think about that when we talk about what's important. And I do understand that it needs to be rebuilt at Stateville. But you've seen today, I took you guys on a tour today, yep. And I think I pointed out a lot of areas in which you thought was in worse shape than it was. And I'm not, like I said, I'm doing this because I love Stateville. Stateville is who I am. It's who we are.
Yeah.
We support Stateville staying open during the closures. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ralph, and thank you for being on that tour with us today. Appreciate it. Christina Rivers, the director of DePaul Institute for Restorative Education and Engagement.
Thank you all for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of DePaul's educational programming at Stateville. DePaul started in 2012. I think we were the first college that was back there after the Pell Grant revocations. I've been teaching there since 2016. So my comments are really about are primarily related to the continuance of educational programming at Stateville. As folks in front of me already attested, so picking up on Lieutenant Zimatis and Ms. McBee's comments, I'll just continue from there. My concern is that we maintain the current programming that exists at Stateville during this closure and rebuild in whichever way that happens. My concern is that we develop a more robust and expansive type of college programming both there, and I will also add throughout DOC and in person. This would clearly call for sufficient staffing both administrative and corrections officers. For example, right now, we only have educational programming during one shift, the first shift, I believe it is. We've long been calling for educational programming opportunities on the second shift, on the weekends, so I want to add that to some of the other things that we've been discussing here, and I'm hoping that that's something that can be done during this transition. Higher education programming, to make it really flourish, would call for a sufficient infrastructure, which we all know we don't have at Stateville. There's some, but it's not sufficient. This includes fully functional classrooms, proper classrooms and equipment, technological equipment, to not supplant higher education in person, but to supplement that, libraries fully stocked. This would include librarians, movement staff, staff for higher education, ABE, and GED staff. And ideally, opportunities for programming, for program graduates, both at Stateville and who've left, to offer course instruction at Stateville, such as used to be the case at Menard in the 60s and 70s. There's ample evidence that higher education decreases violence both inside and outside the facilities. It decreases recidivism on the outside. It increases civic engagement both inside and outside. Senator Ventura's internship program with DePaul are ample evidence of that. And so higher education overall increases safety for all of us, both on the inside and outside. I know I'm a little over my time, but I just want to say that there's an opportunity here to prioritize transformational, humane approaches to harm, accountability, and corrections as Stateville is rebuilt. Obviously, this can't happen without staff, particularly supportive staff, nor can it happen, to Susan Lucci's point, without the input of our students and our program participants. St. Vincent de Paul himself took a transformative, humane approach in his 40 years of ministry to incarcerated people in his time. I'm a proponent of transformative, collaborative, restorative accountability in this time, and I'm hoping that that's what will happen with Stateville as it's rebuilt. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Christina. Appreciate it. Before we go on to questions, we have another car issue. I've never announced this many license plates in my life. Chrysler 200, license plate AL74573. Any takers? Thank you. If you could move the card, I appreciate it. Senator Ventura.
Thank you, Dr. Rivers. If Stateville closed in September, do you believe that DePaul would be able to provide the current services for higher education with minimal disruption to the students enrolled?
Well, it depends on where we would have to continue it. So can you expand on that?
Okay. I don't have the answers. DOC does. But.
We don't. DePaul, we're small but mighty, but we don't have the staffing to offer our educational programming as it exists any much further, I would say, than Sheridan. We just don't have it. At one point, Illinois River was discussed with us. That's 3.5 hours away. It would kill our programming, to be honest, especially because we bring in so many outside students and coordinating the rides and getting the vans. It would be a real disincentive to our outside population that comes in that has really made that program, the Paul's program, kind of unique in that respect. So no longer, but it is now. We don't have the staffing to support much further, I would say, than Sheridan.
Okay, and then Susan, same question for North Park. Do you feel that there, if the Stateville closed in September, do you feel that your programming could continue with DOC and the individuals who are in those programs with minimal disruption?
No, I'm not part of North Park, but no,
my
engagement there, no. I mean, and the guys are really concerned about this and how can they stay together. They just have so many more questions than answers. And, I mean, it's already, you've just toured. I mean, it's pretty dismal what the condition we have to work within. And I think given that they've built community around that, I'm so impressed at what the guys have done, and that I tell them they give me hope for the transformation of our society because I see it individually in these guys who did not grow up at all with the resources I had. We do not resource them well inside of Stateville, and yet they are really the ones I get to interact with, amazing humans that inspire me every day. So that's why I have to be here to speak, and I encourage you to talk to them too. They really inspire me that there's hope for us.
Thank you, and I want to thank Ralph for your comments. My grandfather was a Stateville employee, and it definitely changed my impression of incarcerations. And my experience in that prison has been that the correctional officers and the incarcerated, they have a real respect that happens that you don't see, I think, in definitely in mainstream media, but I don't think you see that in the rest of the state because of the type of family bonds that you built. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Senator Kaler.
Really just more of a comment than a question. And thank you, Ralph, for going with us today. And what you said just kind of hit me. I mean, I've been listening to it all night, but it just kind of came together. What you have is a very dedicated staff here. And I really feel the sense of family that you talk about. You've got good programming. You've got good people. The only thing you don't have is a good facility. Right?
Right.
And so I'm looking at the director now, but don't ruin this. Don't let this go.
And I want to say to Jimmy, thank you for coming up here and speaking, Ralph, to both of your points. We've seen a state budget go from $30 billion to $53 billion in a decade, and none of it's been spent on maintenance in our facilities, and I think that's a travesty. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. I've got panel five, and I thank everybody for sticking around tonight because this is an important topic. I'm going to bring up Rick Bard with Liuna Local 773, Darren Hunter, Stateville employee, and we've got some additions. Daniel Simpson, Nick Chrisman, LaTanya Hunter, I believe it was Keenan Young. If you can all come up.
I just want to thank everybody tonight. I've got to leave pretty soon because I don't drive well at night, but I really appreciate everybody's participation in this. We'll have another hearing down at Logan on Thursday, and then we'll meet again on Friday. But I'm trying to leave in a respectful way. So.
And I want to thank Senator Kaler. He's a good co-chair. We work well together on COGFA, a nonpartisan, bipartisan group. So, who wants to start? Rick? Okay. Is that you?
No.
Okay. Maybe Rick isn't here. Go ahead and state your name.
Okay. All right.
We'll go forward.
Nick Chrisman, Local 472, Sheridan. Good evening, COGFA members. I work at Sheridan Correctional Center as the records office supervisor. I have over 20 years of experience in the department, with over half being security. The department's ill-fought proposal to close Stateville will have a system-wide impact on the Department of Corrections staff and incarcerated individuals, which is why I'm compelled to speak in front of you this evening. I guess I'm not surprised the department doesn't have a plan in place and aren't able to answer the multitude of questions that have been raised this evening. Let our experience at Sheridan serve as an example of the consequences when the department transfers a large group of incarcerated individuals without planning. In September 2021, over 400 individuals in custody were abruptly transferred to Sheridan from Stateville, some of whom had been maximum security for years due to various incidents. IDOC reclassified these individuals, not because the individuals should be reclassified, but instead to facilitate the need to move them out of Stateville. The rest of the Stateville population that was transferred tended to be older, had been incarcerated longer, and had more chronic medical conditions than those incarcerated at Sheridan. The transition was a significant struggle because Sheridan did not have the jobs, educational programming these individuals were used to, and the day room and rec time were limited as Sheridan adjusted to having a whole general population in addition to its wholly substance abuse program population that was previously there. Due to vehicle and staffing limitations, hundreds of medical appointments were rescheduled and canceled because Sheridan is limited to 4 court writs and medical writs. That's total per day. We can only send 4 vans out per day. I can speak with experience that this transfer had not only negative ramifications for the Stateville population that was transferred, but also for the program population at Sheridan. And speaking of staffing, if Sheridan were to receive a large cohort of over 400 individuals in custody this September with its proposed closure, does the department have a staffing plan? Or a staffing plan for any of the other receiving facilities which will see a large influx in population? They don't, which puts the safety of staff at receiving facilities at risk. Their only plan has always and will always be get what we want done by any means necessary, safety and security be damned. There are correctional staff with decades of experience raising safety and security concerns statewide because they know the department's proposal to close Stateville in September is wrought with problems. This is why this right here is what a yes vote would mean. This is what happened at Sheridan when you send maximum security inmates to a medium facility. This or worse will happen if Stateville closes. The rest of the state is not prepared for what Stateville has. Stateville is solely positioned to take care of those individuals. Thank you for the opportunity to include our thoughts and perspective this evening. Please vote no.
You want to go through them all? I'm sorry. Okay. I also want to call up, we had a few additions, Herbert Huey Jr., Leslie Wardell, and Stampley Adonis. If you all are here, come on up and you can take these three seats. Ma'am, if you'd like to
get us going.
If you'd like to go ahead.
Of course. I thought we were waiting for someone. I don't need two mics.
Okay.
Thank you, Kafka.
Yeah, make sure to pull that close.
Thank you, Kafka, for allowing me to speak. This is very impromptu.
Pull that a little closer if you can.
This was impromptu. Yeah. I did not plan this when I originally sent a letter in, and I thought that would suffice. But when I got here, I felt that there was a strong need for me to speak. My name is Latanya Hunter, and I'm a lieutenant at Stateville Correctional Center. I have been employed with the state for 23 years. I began my career at Joliet Correctional Center, so I know what a closure is. When I began there, a year after I started working, they began closing us down, and I was transferred to Stateville. To my dismay, they told us it would only be for a year or two, and we were coming back. But here I am. I'm a Stateville employee now, 22 years strong. Thank you. So, I said that to say that if IDOC or the state of Illinois chooses to close down Stateville Correctional Center without a plan in place, it's not going to work. Joliet Correctional Center didn't have a plan either, but they still chose to close us. Hundreds of us went to Stateville Correctional Center, and a few went other places. But I said that to say that please keep Stateville open. Please consider keeping us open, because I do not trust the plan that is not in place. If it's not in place, then it's not going to happen. My next comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
My next comment is thank you. My next comment is concerning the institution itself. I've heard some of my coworkers already mention that we are the most diverse institution in the state of Illinois out of 50-some institutions. You heard some of the people on the panel. We have not only African-American, Caucasian, Latino, Arabian, Hawaiian, Asian, the list goes on and on. The other institutions don't have this, and the reason why I bring this up is because I feel as if we're being picked on, because we are the most diverse. That is the reason why I'm saying this. If it wasn't so, why didn't they close Pontiac? Or why didn't they close Logan? They came for the institution that had the most diversity, and I don't think it's fair that they are picking on us. My next comment is concerning businesses in the area. If they close down Stateville proper and we only have the NRC open, the businesses will fail. The businesses, they have just began building new gas stations, new restaurants around our facility. Why? Because we are in the heart of the community. We bring a lot of people back and forth to the institution. Not only people that work here at our facility, but you have visitors. And let me not even, I didn't even mention the individuals in custody. The individuals in custody, who Anna McBee said, 70-something percent of them have come from the metropolitan area. That would mean that that's where their visitors are coming from. If you move them to Sheridan, where they have no business being, Pontiac, Menard, East Moline, now they're going to suffer. They're not going to get the visits they get at Stateville. What grandmother is going to be able to travel 2 hours to go see her grandson? This is the reason why I brought that up. I want you all to consider keeping us open while they rebuild us. We need to be rebuilt, but we do not need to be closed before you rebuild us.
Thank you, Latonya.
Hello.
Make sure to get that close.
Okay. I want to thank the panel and everyone for coming. Unlike her.
Can you state your name?
I'm sorry. My name is Keenan Young.
Thank you.
I've been employed in the Department of Corrections over 30 years. And I really just have some questions. These weren't planned either. I had meant to submit them, but Porter wouldn't step outside, and I want to give it to him. But we mentioned the age on when Stateville was built, 1920-something. Menard was built 1878, Pontiac 1871. And I'm not trying to put on closing someone else because of us. I'm just saying, if you're going by age, that. And I have a question about closing Logan. Logan is a female and transgender institution. If you close Logan right now, where are those inmates going to go? You say Decatur has females, but between those are the only female institutions we have. So if you close it, and you're talking about building on Stateville, are you going to move those people to Stateville now? Where would these women go? Second question, when Stateville and Logan is closed and rebuilt, would it be behind the same wall? Once before, when Logan first became populated with women, it used to be a male institution. And they had females and the males in there, and it was a, I forgot what the percentage was, but quite a few of them became pregnant. Are we going to try that here too? Okay, I'll close with those questions. And I was wondering if you could answer those for me.
Yep. I will say, just to clarify, that they're talking about closing Stateville now. They're talking about closing Logan later. So they're going to limp Logan along, but they're going to close Stateville now.
And they'll be both behind the same wall.
I do not know that, and that's I don't think we've seen designs or anything like that, so definitely not. So, and certainly be happy to talk to you afterwards if you'd like to.
Thank you.
Yep, I'll try to get the answers to those questions because certainly those are concerns. Sir, if you'd like to state your name. And
my name is Herbert Huey, Jr. I'm the president of AFSCME Council 31, subchapter 73, retiree chapter. That covers Joliet, Ottawa, and Kankakee. I'll just be real brief. Now, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. Now, I started Stateville in 1991, and I worked there until 2016. I've experienced multiple closure attempts, not just at Stateville, but at Pontiac, and they were trying to close Sheridan also. And out of all the attempts, now, we're halfway through June now. September's right around the corner. This is the closest that I've ever seen them come to being successful. And this is by far the worst, ill-conceived, uninformative, untransparent plan that they've ever come up with. So I'm definitely in opposition of closing Stateville and relocating and dislocating any employee. If you live in Chicago, it's taking you 45 minutes to get to Stateville. Pontiac or Sheridan, that's another hour. And that's on a good day without traffic. So I urge the board to consider not taking the action that the department wants them to take. Thank you.
Thank you. State your name and go
Adonis.
Ahead.
You was looking for a man? It's my dad's fault.
What's your first name?
Adonis.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had it backwards on this, so
okay.
Appreciate it.
So I have a large generational gap for most of the people that spoke up here. He said he started in 91. I was born in 91. I'm the granddaughter to a sergeant who retired from Stateville Correction. He was able to witness things being built up around him during the 70s and 80s. So that is an option that I would, you know, just strongly suggest that it's happened before. We have the land, so for the board to urge that, to build it, to, you know, because the disruption is not just with employment or individuals, it's with the community. And then for it to be evident that, you know, IDOC is a vehicle, and it's like they're saying, take the transmission. Well, we know the transmission is married to the engine. So what's going to happen to this vehicle when you take the transmission? You understand? So when we're gone, to know that it's married to the NRC is like, one, I appreciate you all for kind of calling these people on just straight out numbers and nonsense. Because to take something that you know NRC is dependent on, that means that NRC will be gone as well soon. And how that's going to impact the community, you know, where people, this will come back on who's coming to vote with you all and sit with you all and support you all. So I appreciate that I was able to hear when people were saying things that didn't add up, like we're overpopulated, but we need fewer prisons. We're overpopulated, but let's make smaller facilities. And that was what made me sign my name. I wasn't expecting to speak, but to know that my grandfather watched things be built up, you know, the property or commissary in the back, they could have worked on things by now. I've only been here since 2019. I started. Within a year, I was actually assaulted by a staff, I mean, by an inmate. And that bond that they speak about the officers having as a family and that, you know, how we impact the inmates, we were hit hard with COVID, you know, and I walked in there during COVID. So when we were extremely low staff, I had to wait for officers to come to me because of how we run the institution, how our leaders run it. The inmates assisted me at that moment, you know, and that's something that you can't speak too lightly, you know. For people to investigate inmates and say that they don't help the police, and then they ask why, is because I was my professionalism as an officer, because we handle business. So when you shut this down, I would just, you know, please hold these people accountable for how they're expecting a vehicle to run without the transmission, knowing that the engine is married to it. It's just not making sense.
Thank you. And you're a good example of treating people like human beings, right? Amen. Senator Ventura.
Thank you all for your testimony. My question is to Nick. Is Sheridan currently fully staffed?
We are, I would say, approximately 120 officers down, but it's my understanding that we probably wouldn't see very much security staff. I would say we are probably down, it's less than 10 non-security positions currently, and I would say about half of them are entry-level positions.
Thank you. And is the medical staff at Sheridan currently adequate for the population?
For our population, no.
Thank you.
Senator DeWitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, one of the things I believe through my years in politics is these public hearings are very important to the process. But I think it's important to remain accurate so that accurate information is being exchanged in the discussion that takes place. Mr. Christman, you made a comment, and I want to make sure I understood what I heard. You referenced it was your opinion that you thought all of the inmates from Stateville would be transferred to Sherman?
To Sheridan?
To Sheridan, excuse me.
There is no plan, you know. So I'm just, we were the the place to go were the closest thing to put them. So okay. I just assume that we would
coming,
take the poll.
They're all coming there. Okay. I only want to be fair to this process, and I think it's important to be fair to everyone involved in the process. I've been involved in conversations about this subject for several months now with members of the Department of Corrections staff. I'm certainly getting an education tonight, and I'll see some more on Thursday in Lincoln. But I want to make sure that everyone understands I have not once heard that all of the residents of Stateville would be transferred to Sheridan. So
correct.
I know that comment was made. I just want to make sure that that's not out there. I see a couple of nodding heads. Thank you, Director. So, again, to be fair to the process, I think it's important to make sure the information being exchanged from any of the sides of this discussion is accurate. So
mine was really just a statement based on the fact that we did receive 400. So what happens if we receive 400 more? Not that we would.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Would you like to make a quick comment?
This is a question. Since we spoke about making sure we stick to the information, so for us that's operating in the darkness of IDOC not providing information, what are we doing with that? Because, you know, assumption is dangerous, but there's no clarity on what's happening, you know. Not for you, sir. You, sir. Senator, I'm sorry.
I think we're all looking for the same clarity. We all want to know what's going on and what the plan is, and I think we all have the same feeling that the plan is either doesn't exist or is just being held close by the department or the administration. So if there are no further questions, I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. I know this is very important, not only to yourselves and your jobs, but to your community. I want to thank the department for staying and frankly, taking the beating that that you did, and look forward to seeing you again on Thursday. So thank you all for being here. I move we adjourn.
So moved.